We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
What happened last night in that Tampa Bay New Orleans game? Will Mecole Hardman ever put together a wide receiver two season? And is Mark Andrews a reason to cause panic? We're talking all that and more on Roto-Viz Radio.
What's up, Roto-Viz?
Welcome back to Roto-Viz Radio, brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. I'm Dave Cabin, Senior Fantasy Analyst at Roto-Viz, joined by the Editor-in-Chief of Fantasy Labs, part of the Action Network, Matt Friedman. How's it going, Matt?
It's going pretty well. You know, we had a lot happen this past week and continue to be really impressed with Patrick Mahomes. And we talked about him on last week's show and how I thought he was probably undervalued in the MVP market. And he just continues to play at an MVP level. And now that Russell Wilson didn't play as well last week, people are starting to come around on Mahomes as, you know, a potential candidate for this season. And I still think there's probably value in his number, but I've just been impressed by how well the Chiefs have done in a very under the radar fashion. Like, everyone has kind of been focused on, obviously, you know, let Russ cook, on Aaron Rodgers returning to form, on, you know, a lot of other things like Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. But I mean, through 9 weeks now, the team that I think has consistently looked the most impressive has still been, I mean, big surprise, the Super Bowl winning Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there has been just so many good things that you could say coming out of Kansas City. We will likely talk about them in a little bit, but first I want to quickly hit on some of the injuries. So for Denver, Albert O, and you have learned how to say the last name correctly. I still don't think I'm there, so I'm not going to see it, but with an ACL injury, appears to be out for the season. Noah Fant is also banged up. This is a team with a lot of young players in their receiving and tight end core. I'm not sure, though, if the Albert O injury shakes things up all that much, but I'm going to give you a couple seconds here to talk about any potential ramifications of Fant being banged up as well.
Yeah, I think his last name is Okwuegbunam, but anyway, yeah, very sad to see the injury because he was playing very well before the injury. Hopefully he's able to recover and he can, you know, have a chance to break out in his second season. I think this might mean just more opportunities for everyone else. Jerry Jeudy looked really good last week. KJ Hamler has started to flash. Hopefully those two guys are able to capitalize. And obviously it sucks if Noah Fant is also banged up, but hopefully those two guys are able to capitalize on the opportunities that the tight end void will present them.
Yep. Laviska Shenault Jr. suffered a hamstring injury. It looks like he should be okay. He might miss week 10. We are going to talk a little bit about Jacksonville's receiving core coming up, so we can touch upon any ramifications of that later. Oh man, Matt, that Kyle Allen injury, the quarterback of the Washington football team, pretty gruesome. And now we have Alex Smith stepping into the fold for the Washington football team. Any analysis for us as to what this might mean within that offense?
I think it probably means even more good things for Terry McLaurin, although it's not as if McLaurin was playing badly with Kyle Allen, but you know, Alex Smith is probably the most competent quarterback in that organization. I don't think that's a stretch, even though, you know, at this point he doesn't have much of a live arm and, you know, he can't really move all that well either. I still think he's the best quarterback. And yeah, I'm kind of excited to see what that means for McLaurin. Like, I think McLaurin has a low key shot still to lead the league in receiving by the end of it. So I'm hoping that that's what happens, and I have a ticket on it happening. So that's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that, if you're somebody that owns McLaurin or any of these other players in that offense, I think that it's unlikely, in my opinion, that this is something that shakes out poorly for them. Perhaps it doesn't improve their situation that much, but this was really the first significant action we've seen for Smith now for years. Came in, completed 24 of 32 passes, 75% completion rate, threw for 325 yards, 10.2 yards per attempt, one touchdown, did throw the three picks. But you would have to assume that as he gets more comfortable playing, gets infused more into the game, he might progress a little bit. So I don't think it's anything to panic about. Hopefully it'd be really cool to see Smith put together a great finish to the season. Go ahead.
Random insertion. I would love to see him win comeback player of the year and then just retire.
Okay. Yeah, that would be an interesting one. Nick Chubb expected back at practice this week. What do you think this does in terms of Kareem Hunt's production? Do you think that the team will throw Chubb right back into the mix quickly, or do you think that we're going to see a little bit of a period of transition getting Chubb back in and involved?
I think Chubb pretty quickly gets back to his old role, which means that Kareem Hunt reverts back to his former role of being, you know, a kind of super change of pace back as a runner, and the primary guy in the backfield is a receiver. So he still has value, but not the value that we were hoping he would have when he was the clear lead back.
Yeah, I kind of am not really sure if I'm somebody that owns Hunt, what I'm doing with him in that transition period. I mean, his target totals, not that Chubb is really going to impact those, but he's only been around three or four targets going back to week five. His attempts were in that, you know, maybe like average of 15, 16 type of range. I mean, that could very easily move back down to 7, 8 attempts. And you're looking at a player that could be tough to trust on a weekly basis, unless things play out in a way where he's able to be more efficient, perhaps once Chubb gets back and involved. Christian McCaffrey, unfortunately, looks like he could be suffering with some injuries again. I actually had read that there's a potential of a rib injury as well as a shoulder injury. More outlets seem to be reporting the shoulder injury. It's unclear if he could miss time, but that's definitely notable. We're going to talk about Mike Davis and the Panthers in a little bit, so we can probably break that down a little bit more if we need. Then David Johnson in the concussion protocol, David Montgomery and Jack Doyle. Let's take a minute though to talk about Duke Johnson, who actually performed pretty well filling in for David Johnson when he exited the game against the Jaguars. So in a game where he easily got his highest usage of the season, finished with 17.3 PPR points, 16 rushing attempts, for 41 yards, 4 of 4 receiving for 32 yards, did get a rushing touchdown. Question becomes here, Matt, if David Johnson can't play and you're somebody with Duke Johnson rostered, how much is it reasonable to expect from him in a second game? Is another 17-point performance realistic?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's within the range of outcomes. He had, I believe, a career high in, you know, market share and carries. So you never want to project someone for something close to their career high. But at the same time, there are no other running backs on that roster. I'm imagining that they will have CJ Prosize and elevate him from the practice squad. But I mean, even then, he has what, like 1-2 carries this year. Even if they give him 5 carries, which that still feels like a lot, but even if they do that, you could still see Duke Johnson end up with, you know, 12 to 16 carries and still get a lot of targets. So, yeah, I mean, this, I don't want to say that this feels like what we hoped we would see out of Chase Edmonds last week, but it's a very similar scenario.
For sure. And yeah, CJ Prosize with just 1 rushing attempt this year. And then David Montgomery, let's say that he can't play next weekend. What in the world are the Bears going to do? Is it Ryan Nall season?
Maybe, but I mean, why wouldn't it be Cordarrelle Patterson season?
Because that would just make too much sense, right?
I think that's where we are.
Okay.
I mean, he gets more traditional carries than Ryan Nall anyway. We have seen the Patriots use him as a running back before. That's not to say that just because one team did it, that the Bears will do it now. But, I mean, he's out of all of the guys that they have, he's sort of like the next running back up.
And I think that we've talked about it before, the fact that Cordarrelle Patterson probably could be a decent running back in the NFL. Like, I really think if a team used him, you know, like when Ty Montgomery was getting usage as a running back, that's the type of usage I always felt like Cordarrelle Patterson should be getting, especially on a team that can do some dynamic things. Like, I feel like Andy Reid would be able to use Cordarrelle Patterson in a really cool way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you heard it from Matt. Cordarrelle Patterson might be a player to go after. The only other injury note that I had, Preston Williams could miss time with a foot injury, which perhaps opens up some opportunity for Grant or another player in that Dolphins offense. You know, not really something that I think is going to get people too excited, but probably something to pay attention for if you're in a very deep league. Let's move on.
The one thing I would say to pay attention to is if you have Devontae Parker and you're thinking that this might be an opportunity where he gets extra targets, like maybe he will get those extra targets, but this week he's probably going to be going against Casey Hayward Jr. for most of the game, and that is a very tough matchup.
Oh, great point there. All right. As you can see, Matt has been hard at work on that wide receiver cornerback matchup, yes. Which people definitely... Yeah. When does that publish, Matt?
That normally comes out on Monday nights.
Monday nights. Okay. Yeah. I cannot recommend highly enough that you go check that out. Let's just hit some notables from the games this weekend. My first question here is, how ugly was that game last night between New Orleans and Tampa Bay, which I was very excited to sit down and watch, and it just never even got going?
So ugly that I'm glad I didn't watch it. You know, that's how ugly it was. But, yeah, I mean, just the numbers, they're unfathomable. The Bucks ran the ball only like 4 times.
I think
they had a kneel down maybe at the end to get it to 5, but, they just could not get anything going. It was a total disaster. And if you are, an Antonio Brown hater, this was like the ultimate for what you would have wanted. A team that looks great, and then all of a sudden Antonio Brown joins the team, he gets on the field, and they can't do anything. Not to say that this is all like Antonio Brown's fault, but I mean, if for everyone who hates Antonio Brown, this was the dream scenario.
Yeah, so Antonio Brown, 3 of 5 for 31 yards. Fournette, Godwin, Evans, and Gronk had 6 targets, so that 5 for Antonio Brown shows that already Brady was looking to get him pretty involved. I thought that Brown looked fine in the usage that he did see, and for somebody that has not played in a while, was looking like a decent approximation of what you might have expected out of Antonio Brown had he not had this amount of layoff between games. But yeah, it's hard to really know what you can expect from Tampa Bay, because as bad as this game was, and perhaps this offense isn't going to live up to what you might expect when you look at that list of players on it for the rest of the season, but it's hard to imagine them remaining this poor for the rest of the season. I do think, though, it would be fair if somebody's concerned about what they can expect from Godwin's, Evans, Gronk, and Brown. It doesn't seem likely that any of them are going to be able to run away and be getting like 12, 13 targets a game. But I think that we really can't read too much into this one game, because it does seem kind of like an outlier overall.
Yes. Correct.
Okay. I was looking for my crickets button, Matt. I couldn't find it in time. Clearly nothing to add there, because it was so ugly. So let's just flip over to the Saints side of the equation. Michael Thomas went 5 of 6 for 51 yards. Traquan Smith, Emmanuel Sanders find the end zone. Before I press on to talking about Adam Troutman, let's see, did you have any thoughts about the receivers given the numbers that they posted last night?
No, not really. I mean, it's hard to know, because they didn't really even get the full amount of playing time that they would if the game had been kept close. But, you know, it looks like what we would expect just in terms of like the typical kind of rotation of how the guys are being used. I think, you know, Michael Thomas clearly slots in as the number one receiver, even though you saw Emmanuel Sanders and Traquan Smith get some production when Thomas was out. It's interesting. It looks like they're going to be using Traquan Smith a little bit more in the slot and have Sanders more on the perimeter. They had kind of flipped that at certain points during the season. But yeah, I mean, all three of those guys are intriguing. I think Sanders and Smith will have fantasy value, but it will be inconsistent. Like, I don't think either one of them should be dropped. I think they have to be rostered, and maybe they can be used as, you know, kind of upside plays when you're desperate. But it will be hard to rely on them, but they should be rostered. Thomas is, I mean, obviously back to being the guy.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, I think the game last night prevented him from getting the usage that we might see in other weeks. So we had Adam Troutman go 3 of 3, score a touchdown. This really was the first game that he got much involvement at all. I think a couple of weeks ago, he might have seen one target here or there. So 3 of 3 for 39 in the touchdown. Yeah, just 7 targets on the season. I think it's encouraging that you saw him come in and be able to do that. We don't really have that much of a sample that we can read into. But let's keep in mind that I believe Jared Cook is only signed with the Saints through 2020. He's an unrestricted free agent in 2021. We really don't have much we can go off of, but do you just want to give us any quick thought on if Troutman seems exciting given that one game last night?
I mean, it was in a 38-3 blowout, so I'm not putting too much on it, and this feels like Drew Brees' last year. I mean, I don't think they've like come right out and said it, but it wouldn't be a surprise if it's his last year. So I don't know. Am I excited about Troutman next year with a quarterback? We don't know who that is. Like, maybe it's Jameis Winston. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Like, I'm not that excited.
Fair enough. Big game for Richie James against the Packers. Yes. 184 and a touchdown. I do believe that you've been doing some research on Richie James. Do you want to talk to us about him?
I wouldn't say research just as much as, no, I'm just going to make some sort of inappropriate joke, but I won't go there. But anyway, yes, Richie James, I don't know. Like, this feels like it has a better chance of being legit than most kind of random one-off games that come out of nowhere. Because even though he hasn't gotten a lot of opportunities in previous seasons, on a per-target basis, James has always been pretty efficient. In college, he was a very efficient player. I don't know. Like, I think given what we've seen out of Kendrick Bourne, and then now that like Bourne is back on the COVID list, James is probably going to slot in as like the number two or number three. And if Bourne is gone, then I think he's definitely the number two behind Brandon Ayuk. I mean, maybe he honestly kind of plays like the Ayuk role, to Ayuk, who at this point would be playing more of the Deebo Samuel role, but there might be enough opportunities for both of those guys to produce, especially now that like Kittle is out of the picture. So I don't know. I'm intrigued. Like normally I would say a guy like this has, you know, like a near 0% chance of turning into someone who's actually productive. With Richie James, I think it might be closer to like a 3, maybe a 5% chance of being someone who's productive, which like that doesn't sound like a lot, but that actually is a pretty significant edge.
So if I'm to read into this, does that mean that you are advocating for him as somebody on the waiver wire that people should be considering?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like if you were forward looking enough, especially like in Dynasty, you maybe would have already picked him up. Yeah, I mean, there's the possibility that he actually ends up being a pretty decent contributor for the rest of the season.
Got it. Big game for Jerry Jeudy, as you alluded to.
Sorry, here's one thing. Yep. I should say. Like, this is like, it's a deeper league thing, like with Richie James. You know, like, it has to be a deeper league thing. If it's 10 team, or even if it's 12 team with shallow rosters, probably not.
Maybe fair enough.
But, yeah.
Okay.
I just want to contextualize it.
I think we all appreciate that. Big game for Jerry Jeudy. 7 of 14 targets for 125 yards and a touchdown. We've started talking now about Jeudy pretty frequently. I just wanted to highlight this as I do believe this is one of those types of rookie performances that you do want to take note of. He had a couple of plays. There was one in particular. He ran a really nice route along the sideline, caught a pass, made a move, made a guy miss. And it does look like we're starting to be able to see a lot of those things that you in particular were expecting start to translate into his game. So just another thing that's encouraging for Jeudy.
I love it. And the route, I think I know the one you're talking about. He already knew he beat the guy like seconds before the ball was thrown. So like he's running the route. It looks like it's just a regular route. And he throws his hand up being like, hey, you better throw me the ball.
Yep.
And then he stops on the route and the guy just runs by him. He catches the ball and then he makes a move on the guy. Like he is already looking like very polished. Like, okay, I don't want to like blaspheme by saying like Antonio Brown or anything like that, but you know, like how crisp and clean Brown was at his peak in his route running and how it seemed like he could just separate at will from whoever was covering him. Not to say Jeudy has that, but like it looked like flashes of that. Like that is potentially what Jeudy could develop into based on what we saw out of him at his best last week.
For sure. Yeah, smooth was like the thing I was going to say. Like everything he did just looked so fluid. And then like the stop and start on that play that you referenced, which was the one I was talking about, was just like really well done. And there was a couple other plays too where it was just like you could tell he was getting the defender to move where he wanted them to. So all just like really, really encouraging stuff. Moving along.
Here's a question. Okay. To bring it back to Dynasty, I know we've had some questions before. Jerry Jeudy versus CeeDee Lamb. Where are you on that? Because I know early in the year, everyone was on the CeeDee Lamb train, but now maybe that started to shift a little bit back towards Jeudy. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's starting to come a little bit closer because we have this weird thing now where, you know, CeeDee Lamb was looking so strong. Now he has less competent quarterback play. And we've seen that impact all of the receivers in the Cowboys offense. So it's kind of understandable. But at the same time, it's not like Jeudy is getting this fantastic quarterback play either. So I think it's really encouraging that you're able to see him, in a way, overcome a lot of odds and find ways to contribute. And it looks like, you know, we're starting to just see the tip of the iceberg of what he can do. So I mean, yeah. I still think it's possible that both of them are really, really good, but I would agree now that an adjustment has to be made and you start to say, okay, these two probably are as maybe not, well, they might be as close as things seemed when they were coming out of school. It's just hard to tell right now. But I do think with the success that we have seen from some other wide receivers in this class, though, we probably don't want to throw out our priors just yet and think that those guys have necessarily caught up to Jeudy or Lamb, what we've seen, because like it's starting to feel like the pieces are falling into place for Jeudy very much.
Yeah. I mean, Justin Jefferson is in the conversation, and he probably always should have been. But you know, maybe he's like the number three guy to them. But you know, I'm thinking of Jefferson and what we saw him do once he moved out of the slot to the perimeter. And it's something very similar to what we've seen out of Judy, who started the season in the slot. The past two games, he's moved and played on the perimeter, and KJ Hamler has played in the slot. And I don't think it's just a coincidence that we have seen Judy really start to develop the past 2 weeks.
Yeah. Certainly. And I also think the other thing too that helps for Judy is at the beginning of the season, it seemed like this Denver offense was just going to really struggle. Now, that's not to say that this team has all of a sudden become a juggernaut, but there are other players like Hamler. They got Noah Fant there, other, you know, talented players that are around him too, which I think will be helpful for his development. It would appear that Jake Ludden is a fan of DJ Chark. They connected on a 73-yard touchdown. Chark went 7-12 for 146 and a touchdown. This is the first game for the Jaguars without Gardner Minshew. Do you think that it's dangerous to read too much into this one performance and say, okay, Chark is going to be his guy. He's going to ascend and be at the top of that target totem pole there, followed by Conley, followed by Cole, and followed by Chenault? Maybe not in that order.
Yeah. I mean, I think it helps that, Chenault is out. But I would say Chark looks like the guy, but I don't want to read too much into it because it was a situation where the Texans, I think, you know, kind of like almost by surprise, were without their number one cornerback, Bradley Roby. And so normally they use him to shadow the number one opposing receiver because they know that the rest of their cornerbacks are so bad. Mm-hmm. And so without him, Chark had free reign against Vernon Hargraves III and Phillip Gaines. And, you know, not a coincidence that those are the guys that he really tore up, like especially Vernon Hargraves. He had the 73-yard touchdown on Hargraves. So, you know, part of it is just having an exceptional matchup. But, of course, he also had all of that target volume. So that certainly counts for something.
Got it. I'm kind of the opinion that behind him, it's just really kind of like a crapshoot on a week-to-week basis, which other wide receiver might get involved. I'm not sure, though, if I would necessarily, like, drop. Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. It really depends on the context of your team there. But I guess my closing thought would be, I don't think it's out of the range of possibility that we do see a couple more good games from the other wide receivers on the team.
No, I wouldn't drop Chenault. I would be fine dropping Cole and Chris Conley, especially.
Conley has been kind of trending down from a couple of like team metrics that you could look at too. So I think that's probably fair. It looks like Carolina has finally discovered the utility of Curtis Samuel. 9 of 9 for 105 yards and a touchdown, 3 rushes for 13 yards. Is this the type of thing that we expect to continue? And also, if McCaffrey's out, you have to think that also incentivizes the Panthers to continue to use Samuel, not only in the passing game, but in creative ways out of the backfield.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. Part of it is that the Chiefs are better on their perimeter defense. They're actually pretty good, surprisingly, against wide receivers, where they tend to funnel the ball toward the middle of the field. So normally that helps running backs, that helps tight ends. And maybe this is an instance where because Curtis Samuel plays in the slot, he was just able to get more targets funneled his direction. But it certainly is encouraging. He was highly efficient with the opportunities he had. I would like to see him continue to get opportunities, but I hate to say that because I don't want it to come at the expense of DJ Moore. And it feels like that's what's going to happen. Like Robbie Anderson is going to continue to get his no matter what. And any other week, it's going to be either Curtis Samuel or DJ Moore who gets the shot to be the number two guy. But I don't think there will be enough opportunities to go around for all three of those guys to be consistently productive.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is probably the case. It's probably also worth noting Mike Davis, just one rush, still did see 6 targets. Obviously, if McCaffrey cannot continue to play, Davis probably is going to be in starting consideration for a lot of people. Granted, he did cool down a lot versus those first three or four games that we saw from him when he was filling in for McCaffrey. I also don't think that people should be dropping Davis, or if you did drop him, that was
certainly
a mistake.
Not.
That was a mistake.
Yeah, a lot of people dropped him, which was a massive mistake. Even if McCaffrey hadn't been injured, that still would have been a mistake.
Yeah. Darnell Mooney, 11 targets, actually led the Bears. And I have not talked about it, but for anybody out there that does not check out all of the articles on the site, I have one that's been coming out on Friday. It's called The Three and Out, and I would recommend that you check it out because within it, I have this embedded tool that has a lot of really like quick visual ways to view different trends on a team in terms of targets, in terms of expected points, also where on the field players are getting targeted, in what situations they're getting targeted, as well as like a very extensive breakdown on normally more than half of the teams each week. So it's worth checking out. But I bring that up because from looking at this now for a couple of weeks, it's been clear to me that Darnell Mooney is managing to get fairly involved and in decent quality situations for the Bears. As I said, we saw him get 11 targets, only converted 5 of those for 43 yards, but also 117 air yards, has gone over 100 air yards now for 3 games. So I think that he's a player worth looking for that could still be available on your teams. You know, he's not going to outplay Allen Robinson, but he has been challenging Anthony Miller. So he's a name that I think is worth keeping in mind.
He feels like a majorly redacted player in the Josh Hermsmeyer model. You know what I mean? Like he's getting the air yards, and I'd say it's not his fault. He's getting the air yards. He looks like a decent player. It's just that his targets are so inaccurate. There's just not the connection between Mooney and Foles that even though he's getting the targets, and so he sort of gets the credit for the air yards, they are relatively empty air yards because they are predictably not turning into production.
All right. Well, that is a fair perspective as well. I guess we should probably ask the question, though. These other players on the team, would you say that their air yards are not empty?
I would say that they are empty.
Yeah. So
for the most part, though, I would say there's a difference with Allen Robinson because he's not targeted quite as far down the field, and he's just better also in contested catch situations. But because Mooney is targeted further down the field, like he gets all of those air yards, but he has like a very limited chance of converting those air yards into chunk plays.
Yeah, perfectly fair. Let me ask you this though, Matt. I feel like between Mooney, Robinson, and Anthony Miller, there actually is some talent there. With the right quarterback, do you think that this would be an offense where we could see all three of them be guys that fantasy players might be interested in? Or is that just me, for whatever reason, liking these Bears receivers more than I should?
I mean, they have talent. I just don't think that offense would ever be explosive enough to lift all three guys to consistency. It's kind of similar to what we see in Carolina, where they have three wide receivers we really like, but they can't all be reliable. So it's like a similar situation, except much, much worse because of the coordinator potentially, and then also the quarterback.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, like we can look at them and say like, okay, in a vacuum, all of these guys are interesting, but together they cannot all live.
Yeah, and then to your point about the air yard, so if you look at Mooney's targets, only 3 of 10 from beyond 15 on the left side has gone 4 for 4 in the middle of the field, but then on the right side, only 1 of 8 on throws beyond 15. So there definitely has been a struggle there. What an odd game that was between Dallas and Pittsburgh. Before I even get into specifics, anything that really stood out to you in that game other than it was just surprising?
The Cowboys, I still feel that they're not that good. I mean, that's probably not that big of a surprise to think that, but I mean, they didn't do much on offense. They kicked a lot of field goals. It was good that their defense was much better. That was, I think, like really the unit that stood out. But I don't know. There wasn't really anything that was kind of all that surprising in the game. I thought the offense, I guess the most surprising part was just that the defense was good. That was what was surprising. But the offense, I didn't think actually looked all that good.
All right, fair enough. Well, we are going to talk about the Steelers offense in a moment. But first, we're going to take a quick moment to hear from one of our sponsors. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving. And that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. And right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31.
Hello, folks. Colm Kelly here from RotoViz Overtime, a podcast I host along with Sean Siegel. And in just a little moment, we'll jump straight into the podcast. Before we do so, I want to let you know, as a loyal podcast listener, you can save yourself 10% of a RotoViz NFL pass right now on the RotoViz.com website. It gives you access to all of our content and tools. All you have to do is add the code 2020RVRadio at checkout or by going to RotoViz.com/podcast for more information. And of course, while you're listening to the podcast on the network, helps us out a lot if you can rate and review on your favorite podcast app. I really do appreciate that. As I mentioned at the start, RotoViz Overtime with Sean Siegel twice a week. If you haven't already checked it out, be sure to do so after this show. But let's get straight into it. Enjoy the podcast.
So I think that the Steelers have 3 good receivers, possibly 4 good receivers. However, they just have a preference for Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson. Claypool, 13 targets. Johnson, 10. Juju did manage to score a touchdown, saw 7 targets, was most productive in terms of yards per reception. So I feel like we're at this point now with Juju Smith-Schuster, Matt, where he's managing to produce fantasy points, which is encouraging. And I think that he does have a usefulness for fantasy players, but long term, I think we have enough information to opine that he is going to be playing behind Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool when they are available for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Although, like, last week we talked about how, like, I was rather pessimistic because although Juju had more target volume, he had basically the same efficiency on a yards per target basis over the past 2 weeks as he had for the entire season. This week we actually did see him produce, you know, much more efficiently, and he still had 7 targets, which, you know, was better than the average of what he was doing the first 5 games of the season. And so I don't want to put too much weight on what he's done over the past 3 weeks. And I do think that he probably is behind, Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool, but I think it might be a fairly fluid situation where in any one week, one of those guys can be the one who dominates. And even if by dominate, we mean like Juju gets more targets, but he doesn't really do anything all that special with the targets, he still might see enough targets to be able to hit 1,000 yards receiving at the end of the season. Like, that's not great. Like, that would certainly be a disappointment based on where you drafted him and what we saw out of him 2 years ago. But, you know, if he has like 1,000, like 1,000-ish yards, and, you know, like he could hit 8 touchdowns. If he does that, that's not a horrible season. It's just not the season we wanted.
Right. Unfortunately for people out there, I feel like we're probably going to end up talking about the Steelers receiving game every single week before the season ends. So maybe I'll just preemptively say right now, we're going to take next week off talking about them. Let's talk about a former Steeler. Le'Veon Bell has not done very much with Kansas City. On a go-forward basis for the rest of the season, Matt, do you think we should expect much of anything from Le'Veon Bell?
No, which is really disappointing because you could have envisioned a scenario in which he came in and he did quite a bit as a receiver and got goal line work. But that just hasn't materialized. But he's been enough of a thorn in the side of Clyde Edwards-Helaire really to limit the upside of the rookie. And so it's a total worst case scenario. And like, he's not even doing what Sean McCoy did last year in spurts. You know, like there were games where McCoy was actually viable. We just haven't seen anything close to that from Le'Veon Bell yet, which is immensely disappointing. And, you know, maybe with the team going into the bye in week 10, they come out of it and Bell just has a stronger command of the offense, you know, but that's like a super optimistic way of viewing how this might go. The more realistic scenario is that we see Bell do a little bit better than what he's done so far, just because he would have to do better, I'd say, both in terms of like him as a talent and then also just picking up the offense. But even if he does a little bit better, that's still not enough to make him intriguing.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that you really have to pay attention to is that Edwards-Helaire has disappointed. Le'Veon Bell is disappointed in his time there. So if you are somebody that acquired Bell or maybe you had him and you're in a position where you need to churn some players on your team and you're holding on to Bell with the possibility that maybe things turn around and all of a sudden he becomes this very useful player, I would say that probability is extremely small. So if you're holding on to him and you really shouldn't be, I don't know if that's something you should be doing.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yep. Kalen Ballage, 69 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown for the Chargers. This kind of comes out of nowhere. Should people have any interest in going out and getting Kalen Ballage this week?
I mean, maybe it was a nice performance. It looks like any guy who escapes from Adam Gase in New York or Miami just ends up becoming a star. But yeah, if Justin Jackson is out, it really looks like there's the opportunity there with Troy Maine. I really butchered that name. With Troy Maine out. Let's be sure to include this in the show. People are going to want to hear what just happened.
Absolutely.
With Pope out. It's a situation where the team doesn't really seem to want Joshua Kelly to be super involved at this point. And like Ballage clearly played ahead of him. So Ballage might be a guy who ends up being worth something. And by the way, like, he was a really good receiver in college. And like, we've seen sometimes the guys who were good receivers in college just do absolutely nothing in the NFL. But like, there might be some hidden ability there where they actually decide to use him a little bit more as a receiver. And then all of a sudden he just ends up having, you know, like 100-yard games with, you know, combined yardage of rushing and receiving.
Well, just a quick reminder for everybody out there. He was an athletic guy that profiled as an explosive type of player. And there was always this feeling that maybe he just needed to get a shot and he could kind of surprise. I'm not going to read too much into this one game. But at this point in the season, I actually think that he's a guy, as crazy it feels to say, to tell people to go out and try to get Kalen Ballage. I mean, I'm not saying use a tremendous amount of your budget that you have available, but if you think you could get him for a low dollar bid, I don't see any reason not to toss that in. All right, Matt, let's turn to some long-term questions here. We haven't talked about A.J. Brown extensively. He has been very solid. We've talked about his teammate, DK Metcalf, and how high we are on him. How close to A.J. Brown's ceiling do you think that we are at? And if we're not close to it, how high is it?
I mean, I think we're pretty close there. Like, he's doing his best DK Metcalf impersonation, you know, where he's like getting 100 yards or a touchdown every game. You know, since he returned from injury in week 5, he literally does have a touchdown every game. And every game this year, he has at least 7 targets. It's a situation where last year he had outstanding efficiency on very little volume. And so the big question was, in a run heavy offense, would he see the targets needed to sustain his production? And I mean, we would obviously still love to see him get more targets, which is why I would say he's not yet at the ceiling, because like for a guy to be at his ceiling, like he needs to have sustained high target share. And we're just not quite there with Brown, which is what makes him all the more intriguing that he has still maintained his outrageous efficiency, even though his target volume has grown and even though it could grow further. So if he is able to get, you know, he's had an average of 8 targets per game over this 5-game stretch. If over the course of the season, he's able to bump that up to something like closer to 9, then I mean, the ceiling is nearly unrivaled at that point, as long as he's able to maintain his efficiency. But so like, yes, like we are near the ceiling. But in order for it to be like a solid ceiling, he still needs more volume.
Yeah, I agree with that. And just for a little perspective here, he ranks 9 in PPR per game. He is at 17 among wide receivers in expected points per game, but like you said, has been efficient, ranked 6th in fantasy points over expectation per game. Like you, I'm not sure that there is a lot of scenarios in which he can climb much higher in that expected points number playing in Tennessee. But I think the thing that I'm really focusing right now on is when you look at these numbers from AJ Brown and how consistent he's been, what we know about his profile, he definitely feels like a player that this is going to continue for some time. Let's turn our attention now to Will Fuller of the Houston Texans. We've gotten a strong season out of Fuller, ranked 16 in PPR per game, has been a wide receiver 1 3 times, wide receiver 2 twice. The obvious knock and the thing that people worry about Fuller every season has been if he can stay healthy. For the most part, he's done it this year. That injury discount, or that discount that people have in their mind on Fuller, do you think that people should adjust for that now, or is it fair for fantasy owners to still be scared of that perception with Fuller?
I think it's still fair. And I would say he's played at something that is close to a peak level, even though he hasn't had nearly the volume that we would have wanted him to have. I mean, he's pacing for only like 104 targets for the year. Like that is very minuscule, but he's still pacing for, you know, almost like 1,200 yards and 12 touchdowns. So the fact that he's doing this without the volume is a little bit scary. And then, of course, the fact that he's a guy who relies on his speed and isn't big, and he does have the history of injuries. Long term, it makes me want to sell, even though I have him in Dynasty. I'm a big fan of his talent. I just am a little bit worried. And then he's also, I think, slated to be a free agent after this year. So I just, like, we don't know what the future holds for him. Maybe he goes to a team that pays him lots of money, but just has a really bad quarterback situation, like Allen Robinson or something like that, you know? And all of a sudden a guy who looks like, someone who could be, you know, a league winner each week, is now just like, a low end wide receiver 3 with upside.
Well, he's, yep.
So I would say long-term, I probably want to sell.
I can kind of understand that perspective. So this season, like you said, he has been really efficient. He's outpacing his expected points per game rank by 30 points. He's been one of the most efficient wide receivers. You know, and you do kind of wonder if he really is, for whatever reason, more prone to injury than other players. Is he in like that sweet spot of volume, and would you not want him to go above it? I don't really know, but you make a good point about the fact that it kind of feels like we're getting the best version of Fuller that we might be able to get. So I could understand the idea of trying to sell when you're going to be able to get probably the highest price for him we've seen in some time. Let's also talk about his teammate, Brandon Cooks. And I think that it's interesting to look at what Cooks has been doing, especially since week 5. He's been very solid, ranks 35th among wide receivers in points per game. But a lot of people did not really know what to do with Brandon Cooks at the beginning of the season. I think that it's easy to feel pretty encouraged about him. He's gone for more than 9 targets every week since week 5, 3 touchdowns in that stretch, a low yardage total of 60 receiving yards. And I just think that, in my opinion, he's outplayed what I was expecting. So from a long-term perspective, Matt, where are you right now on Brandon Cooks?
I'm pretty optimistic. It's hard to know what we should make of this team long-term, because there's going to be a new coaching staff. We don't know if Brandon Cooks is in the long-term plan. Like, he has a contract, but the team could get out of the contract after 1 year with relatively little pain. So they might choose to do that. We really just don't know. But what we do know is since the firing of their head coach, so over his past 4 games, Brandon Cooks has 12, 9, 9, and 9 targets, 372 yards receiving, 3 touchdowns. Granted, it's, you know, a small sample, so I don't want to put too much weight on it. Even if you just look at the entire season to this point, we're still looking at a guy who's pacing for his fifth 1,000-yard season. And people, like, just kind of act like Brandon Cooks is nobody, and yet he's on his way to his fifth 1,000-yard season. If he actually does stay in Houston, and if we see Will Fuller leave, which I think there's a decent chance that happens, he's looking like the number one receiver for a quarterback who's really good. And by the way, he's already the number one receiver just in terms of volume. You know, he has a 23% target share on the season. Will Fuller has a 20% target share. Like, Cooks, he has been outperformed just in terms of, you know, actual overall production by Will Fuller, but Cooks is the guy that the offense is relying on more.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. So I do find myself actually fairly optimistic, especially in the short term, about Cooks. Let's move to, are you panicking? Mark Andrews has not gone over 6.2 points in the last 3 weeks, no touchdowns in that time period, and his highest yardage was 32. People are starting to worry about this passing game for players like Marquise Brown, who we've talked about maybe not getting the level of usage that he needs. From a rest of season perspective, Matt, are you panicking if you're a Mark Andrews owner?
Yes, I probably am, which is probably the, like, counterintuitive sign that everything is okay and that it's time to buy, or that, like, if you have him, you should hold. Because I you know, tend to be the donkey who is the counter indicator on stuff like this. But yeah, it is troubling. It really is troubling that Mark Andrews has not been able to capitalize. And I don't think a lot of it is his fault. I think it's just that this entire offense, especially in the passing game, has taken a step back. They're not playing as with the pace that they had, so they're not running as many plays, and they're still running the ball at a very high rate, so just fewer passing opportunities. And because they're not playing quite as efficiently, Andrews isn't getting the, you know, the red zone and end zone targets that he had in previous years. So it's just an overall negative situation for Andrews. And I still think he's really talented. But if you think this offense will figure out its problems, especially in the passing game, then now is the time to buy Andrews. If you think that they're not going to figure it out this year, you know, if you're like a quarterback guru and you're just like paying attention to this offense, or you're breaking down what's happening with Lamar Jackson, and you think, no, like, this guy is not the passer that he needs to be to sustain the passing game, then I think you act accordingly with Andrews, and you probably sell for what you can get.
Wow. We can talk about him very quickly. Melvin Gordon kind of trending down the last 3 weeks. We've seen his carries decrease. Did get 7 targets last week, but just 1 against the Falcons with just 6 rushing attempts. If you're a Gordon owner from a relative perspective here, are you panicking?
Yeah. I think so. It helps that Philip Lindsay hasn't really been consistently on the field. And then when on the field, like, he's had flashes, but he hasn't really been consistent. So you would still expect to see Melvin Gordon overall be the leader in the backfield, but it's not a very enticing backfield right now.
Yeah, definitely not. All right, Adam Thielen trending downward the last 3 weeks, just 14 targets from a PPR point perspective, 14.1, 5.7, 5.8. Justin Jefferson hasn't been really putting together great performances either. A lot of that has to do with Dalvin Cook just absolutely murdering things. But are you panicking about Adam Thielen returning, you know, decent numbers in the second half of the season?
I wouldn't say I'm panicking because I, you know, like putting it in the context of that offense, just being able to run the ball, against the Packers and against the Lions. But it is, yeah, it is disconcerting to know that the offense is totally fine running the ball, not throwing, playing at a very slow pace, because that will just, you know, by necessity result in fewer opportunities for the receivers. And, you know, most teams don't want to do that. Like they want to play at a faster pace. They do believe that the passing game is more efficient, and so they want to pass when they have the opportunity to do so. The Vikings are just, totally going against that. And so it's negative from that perspective for Thielen, but you have to keep in mind the Vikings are not going to be able to do that every game. And so when they get into the position of needing to pass, Thielen is, you know, one of the better receivers in the game. I mean, I'd say like a high-end wide receiver too when he's getting the targets.
Got it. So speaking of wide receiver twos, and I want to look at this now from a fantasy perspective. Let's talk about Mecole Hardman. And I want to know, do you ever think that he puts together a wide receiver two season? I think he's a player that's pretty talented, but he plays in an offense that is so good, but that's because they have so many talented players. We've seen Hardman produce in spots, but if you're somebody that owns Hardman in Dynasty and you're expecting a wide receiver two season to materialize at some point, should you be? Do you think it can happen, Matt? Not actually, let me say, I'm going to phrase it like this. Not can it happen, will it happen?
No,
I don't think so either.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. It could happen, right? But I don't think it will happen because Tyreek Hill is there and Travis Kelce is still there. And they are content to run the ball a little bit more. At least they have been this season. And I mean, who knows what happens with Sammy Watkins? Like, this is probably his last year there. But I just don't think that there's going to be enough opportunities given the other guys there and how dominant that they are. Hardman will, I think, always be a big play threat, but I don't think he will ever have, at least in Kansas City, a wide receiver two season. And like, if he leaves Kansas City, then I really don't think it's going to happen, because I think that's his best opportunity to do it.
Right. I would agree with that, because it does seem like the offense that's going to be able to use him in the way that would make the most sense. And he really, from, if you look at the numbers and you just kind of like go on like a week to week basis, it's really hard to say that he's done much to assert himself over DeMarcus Robinson, which I think, you know, is another thing that makes the odds of him reaching that wide receiver two peak kind of difficult. Continuing along, talking about players that we're optimistic about, how optimistic are you? And I'm going to group these two players together because they've both been crushing the last couple of weeks. Well, really all season for Kyler Murray. But how optimistic are you about Kyler Murray and Christian Kirk moving forward?
I mean, Kyler Murray, extremely optimistic. And I don't think it even qualifies as optimistic at this point. I think it qualifies as like a realistic evaluation of what he's done to this point. And given what he did in college and the, you know, draft capital he has invested in him, the situation he's in, the players around him, I think it's very realistic to look at him and be like, this guy's a locked in, I mean, top five fantasy quarterback at a minimum each week, but, you know, probably more like top three. He's just been amazing, especially as a runner. And I don't think anyone can really do what we saw out of Lamar Jackson last year. The thing that's kind of great about Kyler is that he's scoring all of the touchdowns on the ground. So he doesn't need to get all of that ridiculous yardage in order really to outpace what we saw out of Lamar Jackson as a runner last year. And then as a passer, he clearly has an edge over Lamar Jackson. So very enthusiastic about Kyler Murray. Christian Kirk, I don't know, like part of me just kind of wants to think that like this is very random, and I think some of it is, but like at the same time, you can't bench him. Like if you have him, you have to start him at this point, because it feels like stretches where, like, think of Will Fuller whenever he would just get hot and it would feel like every game he was scoring a long touchdown. Like that's where we are with Christian Kirk. You have to start him if you have him. So, I don't know. Like I feel pessimistic about Kirk, but I'm probably wrong.
Fair enough. And I want to make one point here on Kyler Murray. If you have not gone and looked at that man's game log, do it and then just marvel at those rushing touchdowns. It's insane. And then also the thing I found encouraging about Murray is even if you were to strip away the rushing production, the way that the team is just playing offensively and using him as a passer as well, I think is really encouraging. Evan Engram has been trending in the right direction. He's been a tight end one now for 3 weeks running. Does he finish the season strong and make his way into the top six of tight end rankings? Right now, he's around 10 or 11 to spend, depending upon the specifics of scoring systems. So some of this, I guess, really speaks to if the Giants and Daniel Jones are able to support him down the stretch.
I don't think so, but at the same time, he's being targeted so heavily that it would be almost impossible for him not to finish if he maintains this volume. And the Giants seem really hell-bent on giving him these targets, which, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. Like, who else are they going to throw to? I mean, even though they have guys who, in theory, are talented, I don't really know if they actually are talented. So I guess throw to Evan Engram and, volume fuel his way to a mid-range tight end one performance. But even then, like, I don't know. I don't want to be excited about a guy who's getting, you know, 5 yards per target over his past 3 games. Like, he has 5.2 yards per target on the season. If he gets enough volume, sure, that actually means something. And he's getting the volume. It's unreal. Like, I mean, he's pacing for around like 120-ish targets, something like that. But I don't know, man. I think he's – the way he's being used in this offense is really uninspiring. And so – I don't know. I just kind of don't know what to say. Like, the volume makes up for everything, but like, he's not a player I want to roster.
Yeah, I hear that. And you know, honestly, when I was thinking through the question, I was like, we have not really talked about Evan Engram, which I wanted to, but it just kind of felt like one of those words, like, who really cares? Because some of it just kind of speaks to the fact that he's a tight end and the production just isn't that great from a fantasy perspective, and it's hard to get excited about a player in New York, but at the same time, you can't turn your nose up at that volume. But really, he's a player that I don't think anybody was going to be dropping, and I don't think that people are going to be going out and acquiring Engram, and I don't think that we'd make a case that you really need to go and do that. But let's talk about another tight end, Hayden Hurst. We have not checked in on him much and how he is performing in Atlanta. His last 3 games has seen a spike in targets, has gone for 7, 7, and 8, has done a decent job of completing them. No touchdowns, but has gone for more than 50 yards in all of those games. Right now, he ranks 8th in PPR per game for tight end. So I think he's kind of approximating what people were hoping he'd be able to do in Atlanta.
He's doing a very nice 2018 Austin Hooper impersonation. You know, like, he's pretty much pacing for what Hooper did 2 years ago. That's totally fine. Like, respectable mid-range tight end one production. Like, it's not anything that really like changes your ability to win on a week-to-week basis, but he doesn't put you in a hole at the position, which at this point is big on its own.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think that he's done much to have anybody make the case that he is a really good tight end, but I think he's shown if you put him in the right offense, he can function. So I think that his dynasty value, like probably a lot of tight ends, will be highly tied to the team that he's on. And there are a lot of good players in Atlanta's offense, so I'm not sure that he'd be able to do much to get himself more differentiated in it. But overall, I think it's been an okay season for him. Any other major takeaways you wanted to talk about from week 9 before we close things down, Matt?
I don't think so. Although I think it's worth thinking about the Baltimore Ravens running back situation a little bit.
Yep.
I don't believe Mark Ingram practiced at all last week. Let me double check that really quick. But I think even though he was like listed as doubtful, he didn't practice at all. And so my feeling is that like he's probably still at least like a week, maybe 2 weeks away. But we could still have another situation of Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. And although it didn't seem all that inspiring this past week, I don't know. Like I'm still interested in both of those guys, especially Edwards, who like is the unsexier of the two, but who is the one who's locked in for goal line work. You know, he has at least 10 carries and a touchdown in each of the past three games. And as long as Mark Ingram is out, I think we're guaranteed to see Edwards have double-digit carries. And historically in his career, when he's had 10-plus carries, he's done pretty well because he tends to be a pretty efficient runner. I think he's going to get those carries, and I think he's still the guy who's ticketed for the goal line. And, I mean, I don't know. I'm intrigued by what he could do in this upcoming week.
Yeah, I think that it feels weird for me to say, and I think that this is a position I've held now for a while, is that Edwards is the one that I would rather have, though I really do feel like at any given point, J.K. Dobbins could just go off and absolutely explode in the game and then maybe even sustain that. For the time being, we've seen Edwards and Dobbins getting pretty similar usage, and at this point, it feels like Edwards is the one you slate in for those higher quality opportunities. So as a result, I'm just going to stick with Edwards because I'm not even convinced, Matt, that if Dobbins does do something in one game to really set himself apart from Edwards, that they're going to just all of a sudden give the offense to Dobbins. I think that they want to keep two backs involved.
I think it will always be a split situation. So even if Dobbins goes off next game, I think we're still going to see Edwards have 10 carries and the goal line opportunities. And I mean, against New England this next week, and I think it's Sunday Night Football, you know, the Ravens are favored. I could see a situation where like Edwards has multiple touchdowns, or at least like between the running backs, they have multiple touchdowns.
All right. Well, there you go, everybody. Edwards is the back that you want in Baltimore. That does it for this episode. You can reach us at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at MattFTheOracle. Thanks to Indeed and BetOnline for sponsoring the show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And as always, remember, it's not a fantasy if you believe it. Football is back in swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sports book experts.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.